The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Crime with Holly. It's your girl, Holly, and I am back today with another solved murder case for you guys. I can't believe I missed it, but I realized earlier that just 2 episodes ago, I hit 100 episodes on Crime with Holly podcast, and holy moly. I also just hit 2 years of this podcast as well, and time has flown by. Of course, next month I will be celebrating 6 years in total of podcasting, and I am just so excited and so blessed to be able to sit down each week and talk true crime with you guys. I know I say it all the time, but my listeners are truly the best, and you guys have been so incredibly supportive of me. Some of you guys have been here since the very beginning with my old podcast, and I appreciate you so much following me over to this new one. Some of you guys are just now discovering me for the very first time, and I'm so excited to have you. So a major thank you to each and every one of you for coming back each week, for hitting that subscribe button. And I just really do appreciate it. I don't have any kind of case updates for you guys, so we are just going to jump right in. Today's episode is on the murder of Alexis Murphy. Alexis Tiara Murphy was born on June 5th, 1996 to her parents Troy Brown and Laura Murphy in Charlottesville, Virginia. Charlottesville isn't a teeny town by any means, but it is not a massive city either. In 2020, there was roughly 48,000 residents residing there. Charlottesville is home to the University of Virginia and Monticello, which is Thomas Jefferson's famed estate. So it's not only a college town, but a town that is rich with history. Alexis was described as joyful, vibrant, athletic, and stunningly beautiful. She was incredibly close with her 3 brothers, Avery, Cameron, and Noah. She cherished them, even though, like most siblings, they could get on her nerves. And I think that's something that all of us that have brothers and sisters, we can relate to. These are people that we cannot always live with, but we cannot live without them. And that was Alexis with her brothers. Alexis attended Nelson County High School, where she was known for having one of the most infectious personalities. People really gravitated towards her. They just wanted to be around her. Alexis had a way of making other people feel seen, especially the kids who were picked on or they felt alienated. She always was nice to them. She was literally friends with the people who didn't always have very many friends. She was the person others trusted and the one that you could turn to when you needed advice or simply someone just to listen to your problems. Alexis was also an athlete, and she worked incredibly hard to earn the role of captain of the volleyball team for her senior year. Volleyball was a huge passion for her, something that she fully intended to continue pursuing in college after she graduated high school. Although she was born in Charlottesville, Alexis grew up primarily in Lovingston, where her high school was located. At the time of her disappearance and her murder, she was living in Shipman, which Shipman is kind of like a small neighboring town to Lovingston. So they're all like side by side. By August of 2013, Alexis was 17 years old and she was enjoying the final weeks of her summer break before starting her senior year of high school. Marked on her calendar was something that she was super excited about, and that was taking her senior portraits. And I think that's something that a lot of girls dream about, or at least I did. I know for me, I was extremely excited for my senior pictures. It felt like a milestone that I had waited forever for. I had my outfits planned out that I wanted to wear. I made sure that my hair was freshly highlighted. And Alexis was no different. She wanted to look her absolute best for her senior pictures that everyone was going to see in the yearbook. One of the ways that she planned to make her pictures extra special was by getting new hair extensions. Saturday, August 3rd, 2013 started out like any normal day for Alexis. Her mom, Laura, woke up sometime that afternoon to get ready for work. Now, Laura worked the overnight shift at the local post office, and so around 3:30 p.m., both she and Alexis were preparing to leave the house, each of them heading in their own separate directions. Alexis was getting ready to go buy her hair extensions while Laura was getting ready for her shift at the post office. Before leaving, Alexis was her normal bubbly self. Her mom later said Alexis was laughing, she was happy, and in a great mood. Laura gave her money to go and buy her hair extensions, not knowing that this would be the last time that she would see her daughter. And I do want to pause here just to clarify, Alexis wasn't getting the hair extensions put in her hair that day. She was only going to purchase them. The appointment to have them installed was scheduled for a few days later. So Alexis says goodbye to her mom. She walks out the front door and got into her dad's white 2003 Nissan Maxima. At 6:04 p.m., Alexis posted on Twitter, tweeting, quote, "Berg bound," meaning she was headed to Lynchburg to buy her new hair. Lynchburg was only about a 20-minute drive from her home in Shipman, and it's not exactly clear what Alexis planned to do once she got there, or if she only intended to go and pick up the hair extensions, but what is clear is that Alexis knew her curfew and always made sure she was home on time. That tweet at 6:04 would become incredibly important. Alexis was a very active Twitter user, or now it's called X, but back then it was Twitter. She tweeted constantly. Sometimes they would be random thoughts. Sometimes she would post song lyrics or quotes. Other times she would just post updates about what she was doing. And that Berg-bound tweet fit right into that pattern. It was not unusual for Alexis to tweet 30 or more times in a day. And she had a pretty large following with thousands of people following her on Twitter. So she made sure to keep up with the posts for her followers. At 6:23 p.m., she tweeted, quote, "If you don't like what you see, don't look," end quote. It's unclear whether that tweet was simply just a random thought or if something had happened that prompted her to say that. Then, just 17 minutes later, at 6:40 p.m., Alexis posted what would become her final tweet. She wrote, quote, "I actually look cute right now," end quote. Because Alexis was so active on Twitter and constantly posting new tweets, the fact that another tweet didn't come from her again that day was the first huge sign that something had happened to her. Later that night, in the early morning hours, while Alexis's mother, Laura, was still working her overnight shift at the post office, Alexis's grandmother, who also lived in their home, woke up and realized that Alexis hadn't returned. She had missed her midnight curfew. Alexis's grandmother immediately called Laura to tell her that Alexis didn't come home, and Laura then called Alexis's father, Troy, and he did not hesitate at all. Troy told Laura that they needed to call the police immediately. He had this gut feeling something wasn't right. This isn't like my daughter not to return. And not only had Alexis missed her curfew, but she also hadn't brought his car home. And missing curfew and not returning his car was something that Alexis would never do. Thankfully, police responded quickly, and the search for Alexis Murphy began.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
In the early morning hours of August 4th, 2013, police were notified that 17-year-old Alexis Murphy had not come home. From the very beginning, law enforcement took the family's concerns seriously. Given Alexis's reliability, her strict curfew that she never missed, and the fact that she hadn't returned the vehicle, officers immediately recognized that this was not normal behavior for her. A search for the missing teenager was launched without delay, and as the hours passed, it became increasingly clear. This was far more than a simple case of a runaway. According to Laura, state police were brought in almost immediately. That very first night, authorities were searching not only by ground, but also from the air, with a helicopter scanning the area in hopes of finding Alexis or her car. At the same time, her family moved quickly to get the word out. They contacted Alexis's friends, spreading the information across social media and alerted the community. Laura later told True Crime Daily that social media played a huge role in the search for her daughter. As soon as Alexis's friends and followers learned that she was missing, they showed up. People volunteered their time, joined search efforts, and shared her photo endlessly, desperate to help bring her home. But as the days passed and there was still no sign of Alexis, everyone's fears only intensified. 3 days later, on August 6th, a major development finally came, but not the one her family was hoping for. The car that Alexis had been driving was found abandoned in a movie theater parking lot in Charlottesville, Virginia. but no sign of Alexis. And the location of the car immediately raised serious questions. We know that Alexis had been headed to Lynchburg to buy her hair extensions, but the movie theater parking lot in Charlottesville was more than an hour away from Lynchburg. For Alexis to have ended up there, she would have had to have completely backtracked, driving past Shipman, past her own home, and then continue north into Charlottesville. None of it made sense for her family. There was no known reason for Alexis to be in Charlottesville that night. And if she had planned to meet friends or go see a movie there, it would have made far more sense to skip Lynchburg altogether and go straight to Charlottesville to buy her hair extensions. Investigators began canvassing the area around where Alexis's car had been found. During that process, they noticed several surveillance cameras positioned near the movie theater parking lot, and they appeared to have a clear view of where her car was abandoned. That discovery brought a sense of hope, both for the investigators and for Alexis's family. They were hoping that the footage might help establish a timeline or show whether Alexis had been with someone else. Unfortunately, the quality of the video, combined with the camera's angle and positioning, didn't provide much details at all. Even after attempts to enhance the footage, investigators couldn't determine who got out of the car, whether it was Alexis or someone else. What they were able to get was a timestamp. The footage showed Alexis's car pulling into the movie theater parking lot on the night after she was last seen, August 4th, at around 10:30 p.m. Again, despite every effort to sharpen and analyze this video, authorities still couldn't identify the person seen exiting the vehicle and walking away. The footage was grainy, it was black and white, and of course, it was recorded at night, making it a frustrating setback for everyone involved. With that lead exhausted, investigators shifted their focus. They began identifying places Alexis and other teens from the Shipman and Lovingston area were known to frequent. And it's important to remember that Shipman and Lovingston are neighboring small towns, with Alexis's high school located in Lovingston. One location quickly stood out, the Liberty gas station in Lovingston. According to locals, it was a common hangout spot for teens to go after school and on weekends. When investigators pulled surveillance footage from the gas station, they made a critical discovery. They spotted Alexis entering the store and purchasing gas just before her disappearance. This sighting at the gas station occurred sometime shortly after 7 p.m., Alexis looked completely normal. Her appearance was the same as always. Her demeanor was calm and relaxed. Nothing about her behavior suggested that anything was wrong. Investigators reviewed the gas station surveillance frame by frame, carefully watching Alexis's moves to see if anyone appeared to be following her or behaving suspiciously. As Alexis prepared to leave the store, a man was seen holding the door open for her. She walked past him without saying anything. She didn't make eye contact with him. She didn't pause. No conversation at all. Still, investigators made a note of this man. From the footage, they could see that he had a large neck tattoo, and his vehicle was easily identifiable. It was a camouflage Chevrolet Suburban. A cashier working that night later told investigators that she remembered seeing Alexis speaking with that same man outside in the parking lot. She then watched as Alexis's white Nissan left the gas station, following behind the man's Suburban. The cashier easily remembered Alexis. She was a familiar face, but the conversation between Alexis and the man took place outside the view of any cameras. Of course, investigators considered the possibility that this was all just a coincidence. Alexis could have simply left at the same time and happened to be driving in the same direction. But it was enough to raise concern. Given the man's distinct tattoo and very noticeable vehicle, investigators believed it wouldn't take long to identify him, especially if there was any connection between the two. Now, here's an important detail in the timeline. Alexis's final tweet was posted at 6:40 p.m. She's then seen at the gas station shortly after 7 p.m., and just minutes after leaving the gas station, her phone either powered off or died, about 1 mile north of the station. The final cell phone ping led the FBI and the Virginia State Police to an abandoned property located right off Route 29, which is a main highway running through the area. Because of the time of year, the vegetation on the property was thick and it was overgrown, making it difficult to navigate. But as authorities moved deeper onto the land, they spotted a vehicle partially hidden among the brush. It was the camouflage Chevy Suburban. Moments later, investigators were approached by a man who looked strikingly familiar. It appeared to be the same individual seen in the surveillance footage, and now, up close, officers could clearly see his neck tattoo, a large image of Daffy Duck. The man identified himself as Randy Taylor, age 48. At first glance, nothing about Randy Taylor screamed danger. He was calm, he was cooperative, he chatted casually, showing no outward signs of panic or concern, almost as if he had no idea why law enforcement was there to begin with. But as investigators approached the camper on the property, their unease began to grow. The first thing that they spotted was that he had a video camera on top of the camper that pointed out towards the driveway. And even though Randy Taylor hadn't outwardly given anything away, acting calm and cooperative, something about him just didn't sit right. Anthony Martin later told True Crime Daily that Randy was, quote, the kind of person that makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. Randy invited detectives inside his camper, and while they stood there talking with him, something immediately caught one of the detectives' attention. Lying on the carpet was a very small diamond stud, the kind that could be worn as either a facial piercing or a small earring. As they continued looking around, they noticed a broken fingernail embedded in the carpet, along with a long black strand of hair resting on the pillow of Randy's bed. The hair appeared to be consistent with that of an African American female. At this point, the evidence was beginning to pile up. Randy Taylor had been seen near Alexis on surveillance footage, her phone had last pinged at his property, and now, inside his camper, investigators were finding personal items that could have belonged to her. The diamond stud, the fingernail, and the strand of hair. Still, police knew that they needed more. This didn't mean anything, so they had to get concrete proof that without a doubt, these items belonged to Alexis. Before leaving, investigators collected all three items and sent them to the Virginia State Police Crime Lab for DNA testing. And the results were definitive. All three items belonged to 17-year-old Alexis Murphy. If Randy Taylor wasn't already at the top of the suspect list, he was now. When initially questioned, Randy had denied ever even seeing Alexis that day. But once confronted with the DNA evidence, his story changed. He then claimed that Alexis had come to his camper with a, quote, black guy with dreadlocks to get drugs. Randy said the three of them drank a few beers together, and when Alexis left with this other man, she was supposedly laughing, smiling, and in good spirits. Randy even gave investigators a name. He said that the man was named Damian Bradley. But when investigators tracked Damian down and interviewed him, his story immediately unraveled Randy's version of events. Damian admitted that he did know Alexis, but he completely denied ever meeting Randy Taylor. He stated that he was not with Alexis that day, he did not go to Randy's camper, and was absolutely not the last person to have seen her, and his alibi checked out. Investigators were able to confirm that Damian had been out of state, traveling with his father in Alabama during the weekend Alexis disappeared. With Randy's false statement to law enforcement and the DNA evidence tying Alexis directly to his camper, police finally had enough to make an arrest. Randy Taylor was taken into custody on abduction charges. When Alexis's family was notified of the arrest, detectives told them the suspect's name. None of them recognized it. But when investigators showed them a photo of the man, Alexis's aunt Trina recognized him. Trina Murphy later realized that she had previously purchased a car from the dealership where Randy Taylor worked, and Randy was the employee who handed her the keys. At first glance, that sounds like an eerie coincidence, but it's important to understand just how small this area was. Shipman and Lovingston are neighboring towns, each with a population hovering around 500 people. In communities that small, running into the same faces is pretty common. There was no evidence that this interaction had anything to do with Alexis's disappearance. It was simply one of those unsettling small town overlaps. But as investigators dug deeper into Randy Taylor's background and began talking to people within the community, a disturbing picture started to emerge. More often than not, people had nothing good to say about the man. Employees from the Liberty gas station told investigators that Randy was a regular and that he frequently made them feel uncomfortable. They described how he would back his camouflage Suburban into a corner of the parking lot and sit there for long stretches of time, sometimes over an hour, just sitting there watching people come and go. Which, that is so utterly creepy. Don't get me wrong, I love me a good people watching session, but I don't go out of my way to park places on the regular to watch people. I do my watching when I'm already out and about. And I think most people can relate with that and agree that this behavior is beyond odd and uncomfortable, of course, for those that notice. Once word spread that Randy had been arrested in connection with Alexis's abduction, tips began pouring in. One tip in particular stood out. An employee from a local adult store contacted authorities and reported that approximately 45 minutes before Randy was seen at the gas station, he had been inside the shop purchasing two pornographic videos. Because of this information, authorities felt like there was a sexual motivation behind whatever happened to Alexis. At this point, authorities knew that they needed to get back inside of Randy's camper, this time doing a full search of the place top to bottom. Once a search warrant was granted, both FBI and local police returned to the property. Inside the camper, under the couch, they found a balled-up t-shirt. Wrapped inside that shirt were black hair extensions and a set of false eyelashes. Investigators immediately noticed that the shirt appeared to match the same shirt that Alexis had been wearing in the gas station surveillance footage. Even more disturbing, there was a dark stain on the back of the shirt that appeared to be blood. DNA testing later confirmed what everyone feared. The DNA on the shirt, the hair extensions, and the eyelashes all belonged to Alexis Murphy. The search didn't stop there. Authorities also searched the abandoned house on the same property. Inside, they discovered a weird scrapbook that contained pornographic images. But what made it even more horrifying was that every single woman in these different images, and they were all different women, but every single one of them had their face covered with a cutout photo of a different woman. Investigators were able to identify that cutout photo that was placed on every single picture, and she was identified as the daughter of one of Randy Taylor's co-workers. One thing that the authorities were really hoping to find within the camper or the abandoned house was Alexis's phone, since it last pinged on his property. But despite their efforts, they were unable to find it. So they brought in a canine unit specifically trained to detect cell phones, which this was actually super cool to me because when I first learned about this case several years ago, I had never seen this done before. Dogs being trained to detect electronic devices like this was very new to me, and I guess it makes sense that devices would have a smell to them, but I had never heard about this, and I think it's really cool. And since I initially learned about this, I've seen dogs used in other cases where people were being investigated for child sexual abuse material, and they would have these hidden devices that the dogs would eventually sniff out, which, again, I think is really cool. And that is exactly what happened in this case. The dogs led investigators to Alexis's phone, found about 15 feet from the camper. The phone had been completely shattered. Between the original DNA evidence, the hair, the fingernail, the earring, the items found inside the camper, the disturbing materials in the abandoned house, and now Alexis's destroyed phone, investigators were building a solid case against Randy Taylor while he remained in jail on those initial abduction charges. And eventually, even though they did not have Alexis's body, he was charged with her murder. Police believed that Randy Taylor was responsible for Alexis's disappearance and murder, but there were lingering doubts. Part of that doubt came from the fact that several women and girls had gone missing from the same general area over the years. Enough, in fact, that investigators had to consider whether a serial offender could be responsible, and whether Alexis's case might be connected to others. The first case dated back to October 2009, when Morgan Harrington, a student at Virginia Tech, went missing from Charlottesville, the same city where Alexis's car would later be found. Morgan's body was discovered 3 months later in a field south of town. The next case occurred in September of 2010 when Samantha Clark, a 19-year-old, disappeared from the town called Orange, just minutes from Charlottesville. Tragically, Samantha's body has never been recovered. What made Samantha's case particularly unsettling was that Randy Taylor had once been considered a suspect in her disappearance, though he was never formally charged. Then came Alexis, and about a year after that, in September 2014, another young woman vanished, Hannah Graham. Just 18 years old, disappeared after a night out with friends in Charlottesville. 5 weeks later, her remains were found on a nearby abandoned property. Eventually, investigators were able to link both Morgan Harrington and Hannah Graham's murders to one man, Jesse Matthew Jr. He later pled guilty to both killings and is now serving a life sentence. But when Alexis went missing, this man was living amongst the community, and some people, including authorities, wondered if maybe, just maybe, they had the wrong guy behind bars. Now, what is interesting about Jesse Matthew Jr. was he actually fit the description of the black man that Randy had first initially said that Alexis had been with when they visited his camper to get drugs. Jesse Matthew Jr. was an African-American man with dreadlocks. Because of that, investigators knew that they had to be absolutely certain. DNA from Jesse Matthew Jr. was collected and compared against the evidence recovered from Randy Taylor's camper, and he was completely ruled out. It's important to note that this comparison occurred after Randy Taylor's conviction as part of a continued effort to fully close every possible door, which I want to say I admire that they were still looking into all avenues and not just saying case closed. So he was obviously ruled out and Randy Taylor is the guy. Backing up a little bit, in 2013, authorities spent 5 months searching relentlessly for Alexis, covering wooded areas, abandoned properties, and anywhere they believe that she might be found. Her remains were never recovered. At the time that Randy Taylor was formally charged with Alexis's murder, only one other murder case in the state of Virginia had ever resulted in a conviction without a body. That case involved Stephen Epperly, whose victim has remained missing for more than 30 years. Despite that, Epperly was convicted and sentenced to life in prison. But as true crime followers know, securing a murder conviction without a body is one of the most difficult challenges prosecutors can face. However, in the case against Randy Taylor, the jury didn't take long to reach a decision. After just 5 days of testimony, the jury made up of 5 men and 7 women found Randy Taylor guilty of first-degree murder and abduction with intent to defile. It wasn't until 2 months after his conviction that authorities began seriously examining Jesse Matthew Jr. as a possible connection to Alexis's case, and then ultimately, obviously, ruled him out completely. Throughout all of this time, Randy continued to insist that he was innocent and had nothing to do with Alexis's murder. But once Jesse Matthew was officially excluded and as Randy's sentencing hearing approached, his story changed. For the first time, Randy said he was willing to talk. He told prosecutors that he would reveal the location of Alexis's body, but only if they agreed to reduce his 2 life sentences down to 20 years. Alexis's family wanted no part of that deal. One of Alexis's aunts, Angela Murphy, later told True Crime Daily, quote, "I couldn't rest, or my family couldn't rest, knowing that we didn't do all that we could when we had the opportunity to put this monster away forever," end quote. Because of that, no deal was made. And I just want to say, I deeply admire Alexis's family for that decision. I can only imagine how tempting it must have been to consider the offer, especially with the hope of finally bringing Alexis home to lay her to rest. But they understood the risk. They knew that if Randy Taylor were ever released, he would likely harm someone else. And they refused to let that happen. So instead of bargaining with a killer, they chose justice and ensured that Randy Taylor would spend the rest of his life behind bars. Weeks after Randy Taylor's trial, Alexis's parents were presented with her diploma at what would have been her graduation with the class of 2014 from Nelson County High School. On the 1-year anniversary of Alexis's disappearance, hundreds of people gathered at the gas station where she was last seen. Flowers were laid, balloons were released, friends, family, and community members came together, not to focus on how Alexis died, but to honor how she lived. In the years that followed his sentencing, Randy Taylor filed multiple appeals, and every single one of them were denied. And through all of those years, Alexis's loved ones held on to hope that somehow, someday, she would be found and finally brought home. And after 7.5 years, those prayers were answered. In December of 2020, Randy Taylor finally told investigators where Alexis's body was located. He did so without receiving any deal or reduction in sentence. Randy led authorities to a private property in Lovingston, just a few miles from where he had lived in the camper, and approximately 3.5 miles from the gas station where Alexis was last seen. exactly where he said she would be, investigators discovered human remains. On February 5th, 2021, those remains were positively identified as Alexis Murphy. Public information regarding the condition of her remains and the exact cause of death has never been released. But what matters most is this: Alexis was finally brought home. Her family was finally able to give her the proper burial that she deserved. And on June 5th, 2021, Alexis's loved ones held a celebration of life on what would have been her 25th birthday. In her obituary, her family wrote, quote, "The family wishes to extend our love and gratitude to everyone who has extended any act of kindness in the past 7 years and presently. A special appreciation to all law enforcement, the Nelson County Sheriff's Department, the Virginia State Police, the FBI, and the Virginia Department of Emergency Management for never giving up until Alexis was returned. We are deeply indebted to former Commonwealth's attorney, Anthony Martin. You became Alexis's voice when hers was silence." One thing that I didn't fully get clarification on is exactly how Randy Taylor lured Alexis to his trailer. And when searching online and looking at Reddit posts, there was a couple users who posted in there that was from the local area and was very familiar with the gas station. It was said that Randy Taylor was known to be a hookup for marijuana. And it almost sounds like maybe he lured Alexis to the property with the guise that he was going to sell her some weed. As we know, he held the door for her. They didn't really talk when she walked out, but they did have a conversation in the parking lot. And so it's an unknown and unverified whether she knew him prior to that or if that was the first time that they were talking. But I feel like if she was willing to follow him back to his trailer, that she was familiar with him. We know that Alexis followed him out of the parking lot. They both left in the same direction, one after the other. And so it does kind of seem like she willingly went there, not realizing that he was going to harm her. And I just want to say, we are not going to victim blame at all. I want to wrap up Alexis's story with another quote that I thought was beautiful from her obituary. And it says, quote, "Joyful, vibrant, athletic, stunningly beautiful, Webster has not presented enough adjectives to describe her infectious personality and warm heart. Her humor and laugh still resonate if we listen intently. The shuffle of her slippers and the dragging of the extension cord tied to her iPhone still vibrates in our ears when we least expect it. Alexis is the girl who talked to the kids no one else talked to. She is the friend with a listening ear and truthful advice. The sister who always cherished her brothers, even when they got on her nerves. The niece that made being an aunt all that more special. The cousin that you could always count on. The granddaughter that all wish for. The daughter that made her parents proud. Alexis can be found in the soft rain of spring, the crisp autumn air, the sparkle of snowflakes, and the warm summer sun. She is on the wings of butterflies, for her spirit is too large to be contained by this earth." End quote. Crimesters, that is all that I have for this episode. If you're not already a part of my private Facebook group, make sure you join it by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. In there, I share all pictures and information pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I also encourage all of my members to share all things true crime. If you see a news article, share it. If you see a missing persons flyer, please share it. Hop in, share all the things, join the conversation. I love talking to you guys. If you want to keep up with things that are happening in my life, even though I've been a little bit bad about posting, you can find me on Instagram at Crimeaholly. And if you would like more true crime content, you can find me on TikTok at crimewithholly.podcast. I hope you all have an amazing week, and I will see you next time. Always remember to be aware and take care. Bye-bye.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at weightwatchers.com.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.